drawing room over here.
There aren't too many books that can take you through something as hilariously disturbing as testicular torsion on one page to the devastating moment a cancer-ridden mother forgets her own son on the next page. Yet my next guest has managed to do just that and plenty more in his new book. Matt O'Kine is a comedian. He's a former Triple J brekkie host. Yes, we work together. He's an actor. He's now a dad and also an author. He really does work quite hard, this guy. His new book, Being Black and Chicken and Chips, is based on his award-winning stand-up show and tells a story of a young man trying to grow up when everything around him is falling apart. Matt O'Kine, great to have you on RN Drive.
Tom, Tilly, what a pleasure it is. You're usually grilling me on the on the barbecue that is Triple J Hack, but here we've got a much more laid-back situation.
That's right. We're going to get a lot deeper, maybe deeper than you can ever imagine, because Matt, I've known you for a few years now and I've got my suspicions about you and I want to confirm or deny them before the end of this interview.
Okay.
But first, let's talk about your book. It's fiction and it's funny, but it's based on profoundly moving truths from your own life, your own upbringing. So without dropping any spoilers, tell us what the book's about.
Look, the book is about a 12-year-old boy who's trying to start high school while his mum dies of cancer. And really, we see this young person who's right on the cusp of becoming an adult, or a teenager at least, and is going through all the things that a teenager is learning for the first time, things about their body, where they fit in life, how to, achieve, be a star pupil or be a track superstar, and also fit in with the cool kids, fall in love, all of those things. But while that's going on, he's constantly back and forth to a hospital, basically watching his mum die, a pretty sudden and seemingly unexpected death. So, it goes through all the ups and all the ridiculousness of a coming of age story, but also he has to tackle some pretty heavy subjects. Some pretty heavy realities that we all have to deal with in life.
So which elements of that are from your life and which elements are fictionalized?
Look, there's events that happen in the book that, didn't specifically happen to me, but they have a really great home within the story. So that's why I put them in there. But in terms of the big picture within the book, certainly, my mum got a headache one day. I was 12 years old and my mum got a headache. And, she sort of didn't really leave her bedroom for 2 weeks. And she was really, it was a really bad headache, obviously. I knew that at 12. And then one day I came home from school and she was sort of collapsed in the shower. And she asked me if my dad was still outside because he'd just dropped me off from his place. They weren't together at the time. And then my dad and I carried mum downstairs into the car and took her to hospital. And she died about 3 weeks later. She never left the hospital from that from that very night. So certainly the big story within this book is something that's very close to my heart.
Yeah, but you managed to couch that really heavy emotional experience in so many funny moments that are so relatable from teenage life, like getting erections at the wrong time or struggling at the sporting carnival or childhood crushes. What made you do this as fiction when there was some real world truth in there for you?
It's a tough one, I guess, because I didn't want to be speaking on behalf of other people. When you're 12 years old and you're going through something like that, you only have a very slim viewing or understanding of the world and of the events that are going or on around you. So I really wanted to make sure that I captured that innocence and that naivety from a 12-year-old's point of view. So for me to do that, I didn't want to speak on behalf of the adults around me at the time who would have had a bigger understanding of everything that was going on, but also certainly had to hide everything, I mean, one of the things I faced in the book, one of the issues or one of the dilemmas I had as the writer was, do I tell this story as a 34-year-old person looking back on a 12-year-old's life, with all the knowledge that I know now, or am I writing it from a 12-year-old's perspective with all the naivety and innocence that the 12-year-old has in that situation? And I find it a more interesting story to tell, to be told from a 12-year-old. I mean, the other reason why I made it fiction and And, you know, it's a technical thing. You know, it just makes it more interesting. It's more fun. There's more coincidences that can happen. You can make events happen in certain places that in reality couldn't happen in real life, you know. One of the dumbest things that I've found when I was writing the book, which was frustrating, I wanted to set it in Brisbane because that's where I grew up.
Yeah.
But there's this particular plot point that means someone... there can't be a particular ferry stop in this particular park that I walk home through every day because anyone from Brisbane would go, well, that's not real. This whole book's a fake. So it's like, well, I'm not going to lie about one thing. I might as well just, you know, just set it in a fictional world and really be able to play a lot more with it. It also means, you know, because it's a really close family, this revolves around family. And I had to take some of my family members to places that aren't, you know, exactly spot on to make the story more interesting. You know, I met up with my grandmother just the other day, a couple of days ago, you know, and she said, gee, you didn't make me very kind in the book. And, you know, she said, I always thought I was a bit more of a kind person. And it's like, well, you are, I know that. But I wanted to accentuate, you know, you when it comes to writing fiction of any sort, you've got to really take what existed, but take it to, you know, the next level sort of thing. Oh, so
sounds like you're kind of having to backpedal there and deal with some tricky situations with your family. Because I know that your dad took issue with a review in the Courier Mail about his fictional character, but he couldn't separate the two, which is not surprising.
Well, that's because the Courier Mail put the words in, like took my words and changed it into their own. The reviewer there called my dad weird. Now, you know, it's like anything, when family says it to you, it's fine. But when someone else says it to you, then it's like, well, hold on, he's not your dad. You can't call him weird. So, yeah, he did take offense to that. But, and you know, that's just something that I'm constantly dealing with when you write close to the truth. And those sort of things really upset me because I work really hard to make sure that that everyone is portrayed fairly and that it is really clear that this is not supposed to be an exact portrayal of my family or anything like that. It's just, I get upset when, you know, if my dad gets upset about those things, because I love my dad and I would hate for him to think that I, you know, thought he was weird in any way. But also, I think it's a really crucial story to tell when you've got a 12-year-old boy who has a parent from another country. And, you know, the way that Australian media, certainly at the time, is portrayed and shows what other cultures are like, it's an important story to show that a 12-year-old might battle with the fact that his dad is different.
Yeah.
You know, so I really wanted to capture that. I mean, I remember not much earlier than 1998, which is when the book is set, but around, you know, 1994, 1995, Pauline Hanson was on the news a lot, talking about refugees, you know, and immigrants and how bad immigrants were in Australia. And I remember walking into my mum's bedroom one day and asking her whether my dad was an immigrant, you know, and when my mum told me, yeah, that he is. I remember getting this deep sense of fear and shame because I thought, oh no, you know, I can't let anyone find out that my dad's an immigrant because I know based on all this stuff that I've seen on the news that immigrants are bad, that they're not really welcome here. And I mean, you've got to realize how impacting that is to have kids out there who are ashamed of their own parents, embarrassed about their own parents or anything like that. So I find it extremely frustrating when we have these sort of talks in the media and we have people like Pauline Hanson and so many politicians, certainly at the moment, that sort of have this rhetoric that revolves around a negative perspective of people coming to our country. And the reality is we've got to stop thinking about what the adults think about all that, because adults know, we're informed, we understand, but a 10-year-old doesn't understand. A 10-year-old just sees what's good and bad and starts worrying about who they are and what that means, you know, where their place is in this world. So that's why it's important to, you know, be really strong about a welcoming message, I find.
Yeah, and it's relatable for anyone, because standing out for any reason when you're young can really sort of hit you hard or weaken you or make you struggle, especially through school. And you had lots of reasons to stand out that made you different and reasons to feel vulnerable at school, which is why it's a great story, especially because you've worked through it and become such an amazing person. For people that don't know you, tell us about your family's background. Where have they come from?
So my dad is from West Africa in Ghana. He migrated to Australia in the early 70s. It was not long after White Australia policy had been abolished. So he would have been one of the sort of first waves of African immigrants coming to Australia. He studied dentistry at University of Queensland. And you know, had worked for the Queensland government for a very, very long time. He worked in the school dental van, actually, which is, you know, also mirrors the situation that my character in my book has with his dad, you know, driving to school every day and then sharing the going to school with your dad, basically, who's working in the dental van. My mother was born in Brisbane, and I don't know. I mean, I know my grandmother well, but I don't know my grandfather at all. It's my understanding that he was of German background.
Okay.
And I don't really know much more.
You're listening to The Drawing Room on RN. I'm Tom Tilley and I'm speaking to comedian Matt O'Kine, who's written a book called Being Black and Chicken and Chips. It's about a first-generation Australian kid trying to get by when his mum's dying of breast and brain cancer and his whole world is falling apart. Now, Matt, when I started this interview, I said I had a hunch or a theory or some suspicions about you. And
yes, I'm intrigued by this, by the
yes.
way.
Yes. I think you're a bit of a genius. I think you bring a real insightful, profound kind of twist to basically everything you do. And you're so busy. You've had a series on Stan. You were hosting on Triple J for several years. You do stand-up comedy and now you've punched out a book out of nowhere. And I wonder, you know, you don't have to admit that you're a genius, but I think there's something
going on there.
How much of it do you think is informed by what you went through growing up with your mother dying, having a father from Ghana that made you feel different, having to learn how to fit in that context growing up in Brisbane? How has that affected you and, I guess, sharpen your insight on life?
Oh, I mean, that's going through a traumatic event when you're a young person is a life-defining situation, and it absolutely changed the person who I was. I guess one of the biggest things is that I stopped living for other people, and realizing that things can be taken away from you so quickly and so easily. And I mean, I loved my mum so much. Like, I really was a little mummy's boy right through to when I was 12. And when she died, it's right in that time frame just before you start realizing that your parents are deeply flawed normal humans. You know, you're still in this world where they are everything to you. So to have watched her die at that time and really degrade in health so rapidly as well. It's very difficult to watch someone that you think is, you know, the best in the world suddenly lying in a bed and can't see properly and is dribbling everywhere and choking on her own saliva and having sores and stuff all over her face. And that changes you definitely. Mm. A big part of it, of me even following this idea to become a writer and an actor and a performer, was because I always wanted to do that, but I didn't think I could do it when I was, you know, growing up. It sort of seems like this far out possibility that you know that you're actually going to become an actor or whatever. And then after she died, I was kind of like, well, I'm just going to do what I want.
Wow.
And I started doing that. I dropped out of these dumb subjects that I was doing. You know, I was studying Japanese and trying to do physics and stuff like that. And I was like, what am I doing? This is not me. And I, you know, I could die tomorrow, so I might as well just do what I like. And that sort of philosophy's continued to inform everything I do. And when it comes to actually connecting with audiences, really, I think that all I do is just try to be as honest as possible.
Mm.
And that's not necessarily writing a non-fiction story, because you can still be honest in a fictional capacity. It's just making sure that the people that are going through everything are going through things really honestly. You know, you've got to look at what it actually means to be a 12-year-old boy who's watching his mum die, because yeah. people are like, oh, why wouldn't, why, you know, here's a good example. My friend, her dad died, right? And she had an opportunity to go to see him one last time in the hospital just before he was about to die, or she had an opportunity to go to this dance recital that she had been working on at university, and she chose the dance recital. And another friend of mine was talking to me saying, I can't believe that she did that. I can't believe that she didn't go to see her dad die, you know, last time, one last time. But I can, you know, I know what it's like when you, when you're sitting there and you've been to the hospital 100 times and yeah. you've seen them, their degradation of health. And so, you know, people think they know how you react in a certain stage, but until you've actually been through it, you don't know. Mm. So when I was writing the book, there'd be notes coming back from editors saying, oh, you know, I don't think that people at the school would not know that your mum had died. You know, I feel like all the teachers would have known. When you think, well, yeah, guess what? When it was happening to me, I remember telling my science teacher that, oh, we took mum to hospital last night, so I didn't do my homework. And she said, oh, that's okay, whatever. And then a couple of weeks later, she said, hey, you know, the other week you said that your mum went to hospital. How is she feeling now? And I said, she died. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. and her face, the look on her face, I'll never forget that look, because it was the color completely dropped out of her face. And that's just what happens in life. People can just die like that.
Yeah. It feels like all these experiences have allowed you to sort of question everything and know that things will be okay and you'll be able to move on. I mean, you even questioned why we eat hollow Easter eggs once, which absolutely, absolutely blew my mind. I've never forgotten it. But there's another really powerful deep thought, which I feel like does the same thing. The book sort of has this message, you know, you learn that making people laugh can be really powerful. But obviously, as someone who was different, you didn't like people laughing at you, and that the difference between people laughing at you or with you is you. That's so profound.
Well, I find that laughter thing is, when people laugh, they do become vulnerable. You know, it is a vulnerability showing, because you have to let your guard down. You can't be, you know, no one laughs in a fight. No one laughs. You know, it's a weird thing to do, right? Is to laugh, to make someone laugh. There really is a vulnerability about it. It's like sleeping in front of someone. You know, you let all your guard down in that moment, and I think it's really, laughter has a really important place in all these situations, and that's why my character, you know, uses humor to get over things that he's finding quite confronting. Now, I don't ever say that that's the right way to deal with grief or anything like that, but it's just the way that some people do, and I still do to this day. I remember, you know, and it's in the book as well, I remember you know, the day my mum died, my best friend came and picked me up from the hospital, and we were driving home, and it was Good Friday, and I remember in the car saying, oh, well, you know, hopefully she'll be like Jesus and she'll come back in 2 days, right? And there was just silence, absolutely not even a titter of laughter. And I remember just being so disappointed that—
You're like, if I'm laughing, surely you can laugh.
Yeah, I know. I was like, I kind of thought that's a pretty good joke for a 12-year-old who's just lost his mum. Like, yeah. And it was like one of those things where it's like, you know, it was just like, well, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? What else can you do? And so— Yeah, I've always found humor to be an important thing. And they say that humor is tragedy plus time. And I guess for those people, it hadn't, you know, for my best friend and his mum and that, you know, in that moment, it wasn't enough time. And probably for most people, it wasn't. But I guess that was just my way of reacting.
Matt, it's been amazing talking about your book and your life. And it feels like the book is the perfect juncture between fiction and nonfiction, because you've got the gut-wrenching reality of the grief you work through in your life, but also the lulls that you write through so much of the book that makes it a really fun read as well. Thank you so much for speaking to us on The Drawing Room.
Thank you so much for calling me a genius on the record. Cheers, Tom.
I'm going to regret this.
Yeah, I'll play it back over and over. Thanks, mate.
All right, that was Matt O'Kine, comedian and author of Being Black and Chicken and Chips. I'm Tom Tilley. This is The Drawing Room, and thank you so much for listening to RN Drive today.